Well, the Brooklyn Nets have said goodbye to Kyrie Irving. He's Dallas's problem now. The Super Bowl is coming up this weekend. We're very excited about that. We've got a bumper week of 3rd and 5. 2 episodes coming your way this week. This is number 58. Let's get into it. Gents, welcome into episode 58 of 3rd and 5. James Sloats, Dave Rice, myself, Simon Hampton here. How are we, gents?
Doing well. Doing a bit of old school today. You know, Dave and I using technology, living in the 21st century. We, you know, got our videos on. Si, you're obviously dialed in using some kind of analog telephone, you know, which is a bit surprising because Dave and I are definitely the boomers of the group. So,
yeah, I had to do the, you know, the what's the old school dial-in thing where you put the thing and you spin it around on the telephone, yep. going back. Yeah,
absolutely.
It feels good to do that. I'm now kind of pacing the room, talking to you guys. So,
hey, it grounds you in reality a bit. Yeah, it grounds you in reality exactly. a bit. You know, like yeah. But you know, like good week. It's obviously been a bit interesting with. Obviously, the Kyrie news coming out yesterday, Sunday, US time, and. Obviously, we're going to dive into that with a topic today, but, you know, I feel a bit of relief, you know, and, you know, it's the start of the week, we're starting fresh, let's go. Outside of that, feeling a bit nervous about the upcoming Super Bowl, obviously my Brooklyn Philadelphia Eagles against the Kansas City Chiefs. But yeah, lots on this week. It's good. It's kind of scary, though, as well, because after this, you know, we're back to basketball and NHL, and then you know the dreaded drought of sports.
When did the NBA draft open? Am I thinking mid-November? Is that right, or was it later than that? Mid-December, maybe.
What do you mean the NBA draft?
Sorry, the NBA trade window.
But basically, most people were trade eligible from December 15th.
That's it. So that was technically when. You know, when you'd expect movement could have started, but there's literally been very little activity and nothing like headline until yesterday. And that got the whole Twitter world, like anyone that's got an interest in NBA talking. So that, you know, it's taken this long and it's one of those things where you just got to wait close to the deadline and expect. I feel like when the NFL had a pretty busy period last year, it was more spread out. This one, it now looks like we're going to have a huge next few days, right? Where even the big trade we just saw yesterday, which we'll talk about, that the flow and effects of that and whether both those teams try and do some more moving around to try and sort of bolster their rosters. So it's good. It's good from a we should see some fireworks, you know, pretty shortly.
Yeah, nothing's quite like the NBA trade deadline, that's for sure.
Let's keep the powder dry a little bit because that's our first topic, of course. So let's not blow things too early. But, yeah, I mean, it things up pretty nicely. It's very exciting. I love, also, like, this is more broadly speaking with American sports, but I feel like America does this sort of drama so well, and that sports do this sort of drama so well. So it should be fun.
It's actually, you're the one that kind of came up with the concept that I'm hugely on board where New Zealand using rugby, obviously it being the biggest sport in New Zealand, tries to sort of mimic a similar structure. And we talked about having like a combine for, you know, your best high school graduates to go to a drafting system and trades. And you're sort of bringing this model, which, as you say, like it is a fascinating part of, you know, off field sort of drama that the sports, whether it's NFL and NBA and the baseball as well, can really build up. And yeah, it's something that New Zealand should look at.
I mean, the fun thing is like, I definitely agree with you. But also, I think as Brooklyn Nets fans, I think we've had enough drama in the last few years to last us a lifetime. So I'm good with no drama for a bit, but I don't think it's all over yet.
No, I think there's more to come. Well, let's rip into it anyway, and which is basically means continuing to talk what we're talking about. So Kyrie's off to Dallas. The Nets are getting one first rounder, unprotected first rounder in about 2027, I think it is. which is pretty interesting, because a lot of these teams protect these first rounders, you know, top five protected or top eight protected. So it's completely unprotected. So Dallas will be giving their pick to Brooklyn in 2027. A couple of second rounders, Dorian Finney-Smith and Spencer Dinwiddie returns to Brooklyn, and Marquise Morris also goes to Dallas. So, I mean, I think the Nets were just like, we're just done with this guy now. Like, they just had to get a deal done at this point.
Yeah, honestly, like, just looking at it, I will start off in saying, and I said the same thing about James Harden, the Nets team was definitely better with the talent that Kyrie had on the team. It was everything else that just took so much distraction away from just playing basketball. When Kyrie was on the court these last few months, he's been excellent. Like, they're, you know, apart from KD, you know, like on the Brooklyn Nets, nobody's been better. It's just all the other stuff that comes with it. And like, looking at this trade, Kyrie was very much after 4 to 5 year fully guaranteed deal. Can you blame the Nets at all in Sean Marks and Josiah for sitting back and saying, right, like, you know, we don't want to give you a fully guaranteed deal? I mean, looking back at what he's done, like, I mean, the vaccination thing, he played 29 games last year. I mean, regardless, ignoring where you stand on the vaccination even before that, in his first two seasons, he played, you know, something like 70-something games out of a total of 144. And then over the entire time with the Nets, he's only played something like 70 games with KD. Obviously, KD's been out with injury, you know, the entire first season he was with the Nets, and, you know, he's had a month last season and what looks to be at least a month this season. But that's not what you want. And, you know, it kind of comes back to the best ability is availability. And, you know, unfortunately, Kyrie, his availability was a problem.
It's definitely going to be a 30 for 30, eh? Probably more when you bring Harden into it as well, the what ifs. And, you know, you obviously have the big toe game 7 against the Bucks, which, you know, everything goes completely different. You know, I think the Nets go on and win the title if they beat the Bucks there. And so, but yeah, I can definitely see, maybe not for another 10 years, but there'll be a kind of the what if with the Brooklyn Nets. You know, and that's a real shame, because they kind of, you obviously had the makings to have, you know, a decent stretch of continue for the title. And hopefully, as Nets fans, in the next few days, we get some more pieces, which they've got the ammunition now to try and do, to actually have a crack this year as well. I'm being very optimistic. How do you guys feel? I think it's still too early, right?
I think it's still too, I mean, the big question mark is how Kevin Durant's taken this, and where he stands on this, and if he thinks the Nets have done the wrong thing or the right thing. And if he's on board, I think they can turn the draft picks that they've got. Obviously, they've sent a lot to Houston recently, but they still do have a lot, and they can definitely add in the next couple of days and put out a pretty strong team. But if Kevin Durant's out, then basically you've got to pretty much blow this thing up and start from scratch again. So that's kind of the big if. The disappointing thing for me with Kyrie is I feel like there's been some people on Twitter and, you know, around the place really defending this guy and saying that, you know, the front office failed him and you know, all this stuff. It's like, yeah, I don't think the front office definitely made mistakes in the past few years. Don't get me wrong, but they're not to blame for Kyrie Irving, you know, sitting out games and being unreliable and being controversial and stuff. This guy is just, you know, he's delusional and he's a problem. And I'm personally pretty glad that he's not Brooklyn's problem anymore.
I think it's kind of interesting. And like, I mean, I think it was Dave that mentioned last week or the week before, you know, one day there'll be a book written about this. Hopefully it's from Joe Harris's point of view, and we'll find out all the details. Because, Si, like, you're right. There is problems with Kyrie. I don't think it's 100% on Kyrie, though. The fact that three superstars have all asked for a trade and out of Brooklyn in the last 12 to 18 months is pretty insane. I can't think of
that. I agree.
The massive thing for me
is more the blind defending of Kyrie that's like, they're just like, you know, yeah, like, you should just give him a 5-year contract and you know, he's great, and it's kind of blindly defending him that I have a problem with.
And I agree with that. Look, I think there's a few things, and this is my own personal take with the whole Kyrie thing. Do I think he is an exceptional basketball player that deserves a max deal? I do. Do I think He should have some ridiculous conditions written in his contract. I don't. But I do believe that he should have games played conditions in his contract. And while I don't think he should get a fully guaranteed deal, I think, you know, 70%. But looking at it from an outsider's point of view, I can absolutely understand that the positioning the Nets took. I can absolutely understand them wanting to just move the hell on from Kyrie. And, you know, like, Kyrie's doing what Kyrie does. I don't think any of the players, I don't think we've seen a player out and out say they have a problem with Kyrie Irving.
I was actually going to bring it up. I think, like, wherever he's gone, everyone's always very much spoken positively of him as a teammate in terms of, you know, playing with him. And so I think, yeah, he's very popular amongst the, you know, in the sheds and the teams he's been at. So it's, we don't obviously get to see that side of it. And even if, when you watch games and afterwards, like, he's always, you know, got good camaraderie with the opposition, the other players. Like, he embraces them. They seem to sort of do the same with him. So it's, yeah, that's an interesting aspect.
It's honestly, like, for me, as a fan, it fucking sucks. Like, it really does. Like, there's no way I can sugarcoat it. Like you said, Dave, like, there'll be a documentary at some point and we'll look back on this era where we've had, you know, some of the greatest basketball players in this era of basketball to play for one team. And it resulted in basically the team giving up a whole bunch of picks and not really going anywhere.
One playoff series win, effectively.
Yeah, which is incredibly disappointing. We'll see where the Nets go from here. Like, I do have hope moving forward. But I guess, kind of, just before we talk about what their future is, how do you both rate what that trade was? You know, sitting there as a Nets fan, do you think the Nets, I mean, obviously there's a whole bunch more to come with this, but do you think the Nets won that trade? Because when I'm sitting there, I'm looking at what other deals have been leaked. There was obviously Russell Westbrook coming over with the 27 and 29 first round picks from the Lakers. There was the Clippers with their first round pick with Leonard and a bunch of other role players. There was the Phoenix Suns, who were willing to give up, I think, one first round pick and CP3. I didn't see any others leak, but what are you guys thinking? Because and Si, we'll jump to you first, because I know you're on your analog phone. What do you think? Like, are you happy with this? Do you think the Nets did the right thing? Size deep in analog world, obviously.
Deep in thought.
Dave, what do you think, man?
He's on mute. He's on mute.
Oh. Right. Great work, man.
The analog phone is mute.
Yeah. Well, what do you think?
Sorry. The Phoenix one includes Jay Crowder as well. So that was another sort of piece. I think the Nets probably did as well as they could. I think at the end of the day, at this point, there was probably no predicting how the season could have gone once Kyrie's requested a trade, and if they'd tried to keep him in strong arm into staying, whether he would have just sabotaged this season in some way. And then you're left with Kyrie leaving for nothing, and then that certainly means KD's probably going as well in the summer. So I think they kind of had to force a trade. I think they did pretty well. They've got some future draft capital that they can either turn into a trade, and they've got a couple of good, not great players. And I think, you know, I think probably, you know, who won the trade? It's like, well, it's hard to sort of, you know, declare winners or losers before the players have even played. The time will probably tell on that front. But I think the Nets have done probably as well as they could. And certainly looking at the other reported trades, I think it's the best trade out of those ones that have been reported.
I also like when you're getting rid of one of your star players, I don't like giving them to, like, your rival teams, and obviously in this case to an Eastern Conference, like, fellow contender. So, like, obviously it was never going to go to Boston, but just using Boston as an example, you don't want to be sending KD to Boston if that's what ends up. You know, there's been talks that there could be in the back, and I don't. That's the worst possible thing, because you have to get through them to even get to finals. So, like, I like the fact that if you are getting rid of one of your star players, send them off to the West. As well, and I agree with you. I think that was probably the best offer on the table.
It's the best offer on the table. So this is the interesting thing. This is what I took out of this. One, they didn't send him to the Lakers, which is an ultimate
out of pity move. Yeah.
But two, like, the fact that they did this trade with the Mavs and what they got back shows to me that Brooklyn still wants to compete. You know, if they were going to blow up absolutely everything, that Lakers deal is by far the best, because those Lakers 27, 29 picks are going to be worth a lot. The fact that they've moved to get two players that slot in really nicely into this Nets team, they improve our defense. You know, we potentially could shift Dinwiddie, like is being rumored, you know, almost immediately again. And we got picks. I'm totally happy with that.
Yeah, I agree. And you're spot on with the Lakers one. And people are saying, well, they couldn't bring Westbrook back to Teddy. Westbrook wouldn't have even played a game with the Nets. I think they would have bought him out if they'd traded for him, because they would have been going down the rebuild path anyway. So, and KD probably would have been traded as well. So, I agree. I think I like the fact that the trade signals that they're going to try and compete going forward. And the reality is, and if you know, a lot can happen in the next 3 days, and if Kevin Durant does in fact turn around and want to be traded out, then they still have, you know, pieces that, you know, they could flip Dinwiddie again to someone else and recoup some more draft capital. So I think that they're in a pretty good position here, and I'm kind of excited to see where they go in the next 3 days.
So am I. And, you know, honestly, like, looking at this, I don't think KD is going anywhere this trade deadline. Obviously, you know.
The summer is the one where it'll be interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, the summer's definitely going to be the interesting one. And, you know, I've already looked into my crystal ball. I've shared it on social media. I think by the end of the day, Thursday, and we're going to be doing a NBA trade deadline episode as well later in the week. So definitely listen out for that. But the hot take that I had is that either OG from Toronto, Zach LaVine from the Bulls, and DeMar DeRozan from the Bulls, one of those three will be on the Nets by the end of the day, Thursday. So we'll see if I'm full of shit, or we'll see if my crystal ball is working well again.
And Van Fleet would be another potential, right?
I think it just depends what we do with, like, Harris, what's happening actually with Curry. Siakam would obviously be great as well, but Siakam and Ben Simmons can't be on the same on the Nets team because of their contracts. And the fact that we didn't draft either of them. So we'll see. It's going to, like you've both said, it's going to be a pretty interesting next few days for sure.
I would love them to get Siakam and then do a bad contract swap with Phoenix and somehow send Simmons to Phoenix for Chris Paul. I think that would be that would be really, really changing the roster, but that would be a lot of fun. Anyway, a lot could happen in the next 3 days, and a lot. I feel like there's plenty more storylines to come here, and there's probably some things that we haven't even thought about, haven't even discussed that could well happen as well. So it's going to be a fun few days in the NBA. But we didn't really expect to be talking NBA on this episode, and we plan to be talking Super Bowl, which is coming up this Sunday evening. So let's get into that now, and we'll do a couple of topics. Even more than a few topics actually on the Super Bowl this week. And we'll start with the Eagles, which is your team. And we want to go through each team, the two, the Chiefs and the Eagles, and work out why they will win the game on Sunday. So if we're looking at the Eagles, why do we think the Eagles are going to win the Super Bowl?
I think the Eagles' key to success is kind of two areas. One, their run game, being dominant on the ground. They've got lots of running options. They've got, you know, Gainwell, Sanders. I can't even remember the other guys now. They've got so many running backs. And then they've obviously got Jalen Hurts. And that's even before you take the air yards. And I think just grinding down that Eagles defense is going to be absolutely key for them. They've got, you know, fantastic running backs there. So that is going to be key number one for me, is maintaining that run game, getting those fresh legs constantly in, and just absolutely pounding the rock. I think the other thing for me is going to be on the defensive side of the ball. This isn't kind of rocket science coming in from me, but obviously Patrick Mahomes is one of, if not the best quarterbacks in the league. He's winning NFL MVP for sure. He's had an absolute great year with, you know, not a lot of great weapons on offense. You know, Travis Kelce's still there, but he doesn't have Tyreek Hill anymore and a bunch of those speedsters. They've obviously had injury concerns with a bunch of guys. But shutting down Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce on offense is absolutely going to be important. I think their run game, you know, for the Chiefs, with Pacheco. Pacheco's been great, you know, in the offseason. He's been, you know, getting up near, if not over 100 yards in most games. So I'm not super worried about their run, but just kind of forcing Patrick Mahomes, who, you know, with this weird ankle injury, into bad situations is going to be their key.
Thinking about what sort of expanding, I guess, on what Fletcher said there. With, I think the when you actually just break it down into all the different segments, you know, so you obviously got quarterback, but if you go, you know, the running backs or the group of running backs, the or the rushing performance, you got the receiving group, the O-line, the pass rush, the secondary. There's probably pretty strong arguments to say the Eagles are better head-to-head against the Chiefs everywhere except quarterback. And so that's where I think the Eagles, you know, if you're kind of looking at, and I mean, Brett has kind of put it on there, but it's the way that they sort of play, they kind of bully the opposition. And, you know, especially with that O-line, and they just, and, you know, they'll be looking to try and get 200 rushing yards. And, so I could definitely see, me picking the Chiefs, I'm definitely, I don't feel that confident, because if you just go across the whole, you know, lineup of team, like the Eagles have built such a strong roster this season, and that they might not have had the toughest schedule that's been well documented, but you know they've beaten up pretty good teams. I mean, 49ers, I was expecting a lot closer. Yes, there was the concern with the quarterback, but they sort of really dominated them as well anyway, and they'll be looking to do that again. So you know, obviously they should be fitter. You know, Lane Johnson, Jalen Hurts should be in pretty good nick now after the week off. So I think there's a lot you can, if you're sort of looking at this from a gambling point of view and which way to go, I think there's a lot to like about what the Eagles kind of have as an overall package. And as Thwaite said, and we'll talk about it for the Chiefs, there's obviously that Mahomes factor, which is, you know, sort of glaringly obvious as to why you might go against.
Yeah, and Eagles at the moment, like, I mean, this line has been bouncing all over the place. The Eagles at the moment are 1.5 point favorites over the Chiefs. We'll see if that changes more, because obviously the Chiefs opened as favorites. But Si, what do you think? What are your kind of opinions on this Eagles team and what they need to do to win?
Well, I think it's a very well-rounded package. Like, I don't see, you know, like, again, talk about the Chiefs soon, and you look at their defense and wonder whether the Eagles can expose that. I don't think there's that glaring sort of issue for the Eagles, and I think that makes them pretty tricky to play against. So I think, the Eagles just have quality across the board, and I think their offense will probably have, you know, their offense has the ability to score quite a few points against this Chiefs side. So, I think they're just a very well-rounded package.
Love it.
Yep.
Well, Si, let's flip over to the other side.
This is I'm finding it tricky, because usually I'm used to this, like, see, I'm always watching you guys. I can see you on camera and sort of pick up the cues that way, and then now I'm like, now I can't see you. I can't pick up the cues, and it makes for some awkward topic transitions, but that's all good, because no one really cares. But let's talk Chiefs. So same question for the Chiefs. Why will they win the Super Bowl? How will they win the Super Bowl?
I think for the Chiefs, and Dave will selfishly start here to probably nobody's surprise, but I think for me, for the Chiefs is, I mean, the Patrick Mahomes factor. This is, like we said, one of, if not the best quarterback in the league, working with, you know, people that have been, you know, almost underdogs all year. I mean, you can never really, truly, honestly call Patrick Mahomes an underdog at all. But what he's done with that team, what Andy Reid's done with that team, especially last week, when you look at that fact that he's technically on a high ankle sprain, he threw for 326 yards and 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. I mean, he was hobbling around slightly, but like, he still looked lights out. And this is, again, like I said, you know, working around the ball a lot of the time. I mean, he threw the ball to you know, 10 different receivers, you know, at least had one target and one reception, which is pretty insane. So, you know, they're just working with what they've got, and it's really impressive. Andy Reid is an excellent coach, and the fact that he can game that much on offense, spread the ball around, so you never really know who's truly getting it. You know, obviously it's going to go through, you know, Kelce a lot of the time, but the fact that MVS went for, you know, 116 yards, you know, the fact that Pacheco is suddenly being targeted six times for five receptions, you know, and McKinnon's less than that. Like, it just shows you how unpredictable this Chiefs team can be. I think the other side, like, and again, flipping it on the other side of the ball, their defense needs to do exactly what they did against the Bengals. They just need to be consistent. They've been lights out in the playoffs. Keeping Joe Burrow to, you know, under 300 yards and picking him off twice, you know, while forcing the Bengals into bad mistakes and giving up stupid penalties. They can do that against the Eagles. They really can. So those are kind of, again, the two key things for me. I think, you know, the Mahomes factor, you know, you can never count him out with Andy Reid and the way he's coaching with all those different receivers. And then the Chiefs defense just being consistent. I'll say the one massive curveball I have going into this before we get to predictions and before I let you two talk. The Eagles have had a very easy run into the playoffs, but they haven't showed a lot of their playbook to opposing teams. The Chiefs have had, you know, these games where they're having to show a lot of their plays off. So we'll see if that is a factor.
Yeah, to me, that I put nothing to that, because, and the reason is Andy Reid, and like, he's kind of like a master tactician with this stuff, and I've got that week, I've had that extra week, so I feel like they'll pull out some random things that haven't been shown at all this season. I think I wouldn't be surprised. I think so. Yeah, I don't think there's too much, but I quickly noted down again back in the Chiefs, so I had to give myself reason. Six things. Number one, Patrick Mahomes. Number two, Andy Reid's play calling. Number three, Kansas City's third Super Bowl in 4 years. So I think that probably shouldn't be understated, that, you know, this is the big show. This is a huge, this is the biggest moment for everyone in their lives, unless you're a Kansas City and it's your third biggest moment of your life or part of it. So I think, you know, because it can overwhelm people. And I mean, end of the day, like, Jalen Hurts has had an incredible season, probably would be MVP many seasons. It may just miss out to Mahomes this year, but, and maybe the injury didn't help him. But like, this is a huge occasion. And, you know, like, he could, you'd expect nerves, and it'll be interesting to see how quickly he settles. I think the fact that the Eagles have such a strong run game, I'd expect to see a lot of like palming off and just getting them touch the ball and getting into it rather than sending down, you know, 60-yard dart at the start. Number four, I got Mahomes Kelce connection. And I guess what I'm thinking there is just critical moments. You know, if you're going to see like a 3rd and 7 on a key drive, or, you know, in the 2-minute drill of first or second half, just that Mahomes Kelce. I don't know how Kelce does it. Everyone double tees him. Everyone's trying to shut him down, but he just seems to always get free.
And so always just that yards after catch as well. Because you're right. Like, in those 3rd and 7s, he can get the ball and he's still 4 yards away. He's still double teamed. Yet he just drives over, you know, or does like a quick slant. It's insanely.
Yeah. So I think in the match, even though I would say the Eagles have a better like receiving core, you know, Kelce's the best receiver in the game, in the final, in the Super Bowl. And then last two.
Don't know if I want to count out A.J. Brown, but I'll let you
know. No. Well, I'm just talking about.
No, I get what he's saying. Yeah.
I'm talking about third, you know, if it's the game's on the line and you need.
You get out of jail card.
Yeah, it could be 3rd and 15 itself. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
And then last two I've got. So I actually, because I read this in advance of this, so the pass rush for Kansas City. So Chris Jones is having a great season, but they actually had, as a team, the second most sacks in the NFL this year. So I think the pass rush and putting the pressure, as you sort of mentioned, Blake, putting pressure on Jalen Hurts is going to be such a key determinant of this game. And yeah, so the Eagles easily got the most, but I think the pass rush of Kansas City Chiefs has been really good in the playoffs and during the season. And yeah, led by Chris Jones. And then the last thing is, if you guys recall, the last Super Bowl Kansas City was in was against Tampa, and they got the O-line got absolutely destroyed. It was kind of, you felt bad for Mahomes. Mahomes was doing superhuman things and still getting the ball away and getting a lot of, seemed to be getting dropped a lot. It wasn't his fault, but yeah, he was just getting absolutely, or the O-line was getting absolutely mauled, and they've addressed that. So, like, I think their O-line is, while it's not as good as the Eagles, it is a lot better than it has been in recent seasons. So they've kind of addressed that. So I expect Mahomes, even on half a leg, to sort of have more time, or enough time for Mahomes, I guess. So those are kind of the key things I looked at.
So is he even on half a league at this point? Are we past that? Are we? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
It's confusing, eh?
he certainly doesn't play like it anyway. I think the Kelce point you make is a really, really good one, because that to me is a big advantage. Like, I don't think the Eagles are great receivers. It's just mentioned just before, but I just feel like Kelce's that get out of jail card that I don't know if Jalen Hurts has that guy. And we see it some other times, like, you know, in the past, Lamar Jackson, Mark Andrews, it has been the same in Baltimore. I don't know if Jalen Hurts has that guy, whereas, yeah, you're right, like Kelce, just whenever they just need to get a play and get a first down, it goes to Kelce and he gets it done. So I think that's a huge advantage. I think the Mahomes thing is massive. Like, he just finds a way to get things done. Doesn't matter what name's on the back of the jersey. He finds his guys. And look, I mean, like, they've been good throughout the season. I think they've been one of the few teams this season that haven't gone through weird dips in form. Like, I think a lot of the best teams, you know, the Bengals started slowly. They had the first couple of games, they were pretty bad. The Bills had a few bad games in there at times. The Eagles were a little bit scratchy later in the season, but righted the ship pretty quickly. But I think the Chiefs have been really consistent throughout, and I think I do think they're going to win by, you know, score or less. But I think a big reason will be Mahomes, and I think it's just they've got one of the best play callers in the game, and Andy Reid, and I think Mahomes will find a way to get it done.
Yep.
Well, yeah. That segues nicely into our predictions, I guess.
Make a prediction to go into the predictions topic. That's baby.
So, look, I'm going to start off with my predictions because, again, I always think I'm the most important person in the world when it comes to the Eagles. But, look, I think it's going to be close up until halftime. I think the Eagles are going to run away with it in the second half. I think they're going to win by at least 14 points.
Put money on that, because that'll be a decent.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to go 31-17 Eagles. Dave, what are you thinking, mate?
You go, Simon. I actually haven't. I've thought of like random like bets to put on that I liked as opposed to the score. But I'll. So if you want to take it, Simon, and then I'll have a quick think.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't thought too much about an exact scoreline, but I would say I think it'll be in the sort of 27-23 range to the Chiefs. I think so. Let's go with 27-23.
I'll go 30-27 Chiefs.
There you go.
Nice.
There you go. If you had to place like a little sneaky bet on this game, where would it be going? Not necessarily on a winner. Are you looking at a Kelce to get anytime touchdown? Are you looking at, you know, Jalen Hurts over a certain number of rushing yards? Where would you go?
Oh, this is hard. This is like, normally I'm really good with first touchdown scorer bets.
Hello, this is your 2018, is it 2018 Super Bowl or 2019 Super Bowl?
Mate,
didn't you make a lot of money on that game?
I've had it every single year that we've been in America, apart from, which is 5 years now, apart from one.
Yeah, OBJ. A lot of us were on OBJ last year, which was last year.
Yeah, it definitely was. I think this year though, I really struggle with it, just because like it, you know, like in past years, it's kind of been pretty clear to me like what could happen, you know, and how I could see like teams scoring touchdowns. I just think like the first touchdown in my head is probably going to be a rushing touchdown from the Eagles. If I had a gun to my head and had to pick one, it would probably be Jalen Hurts. Just the amount of like hands that could possibly come in and touch that ball, I just don't want to get on board with that. I think Jalen Hurts to score a rushing touchdown, anytime rushing touchdown, would be definitely one I'd take. And then probably Patrick Mahomes turning the ball over. I would say definitely kind of just having a look what his over-unders there would be, would definitely be, you know, if it's over two, I'm taking Patrick Mahomes to turn the ball over at least twice.
Right. Yeah. I had a look. The thing I think with the bets is you kind of need to think about, okay, well, what, and the way to look at it is, okay, you, so for Thwaites' case, you're obviously on the Eagles here and you actually think they'll run away with it. So then it's like, okay, well, thinking about if that's how you think the game will unfold, you can obviously marry up bets like that, right? And so something like, if you're thinking the Eagles are going to win, like I would avoid like a Jalen Hurts over X number of yards rushing. I would go for the rushing attempts, because the worst thing you could see is if the Eagles are winning and you know, victory formation, he's going to go back like minus 5 yards, minus 10 yards, but he'll have all those three or four freebie kneels at the end. So that's like a good little, if that's something that you could add to your parlay of, if you're backing, say, the Eagles. But ones I was looking at, I like Pacheco for the, I like Pacheco as a receiving touchdown. From Mahomes, because you know how Mahomes, they do these little like tosses, kind of like a little netball pass, just about like it's that's a real Mahomes read kind of move, and I feel like Pacheco could easily be on the end of that. So
that's
I kind of like
spicy. That's a spicy one as well, because like Pacheco, like up until a certain point, like was not taking passes in the backfield at all. You know, mm-hmm. It was always Jerick McKinnon. Obviously, you know, against the Bengals, that was a bit different. So I like that call, Dave.
Yeah, yeah. Another spice one. Last year, who won the MVP? I believe it was Cooper Kupp.
It was Cooper Kupp. Should have been Aaron Donald.
Yep.
Shout out Potter.
now, can we see? Now, clearly, the favorites are going to be Mahomes, then Hurts, then it'll probably be Daylight. I think I saw it was 12-1 to be Kelsey. I could see, you know, Mahomes is going to have to probably throw a pick or two or turn over the ball or not quite be 100. And Kelsey's going to probably have to get, you know, sort of 100 plus yards, touchdown, and just those key third down conversions. But that, I can see a world where that happens. You could also maybe look at, from if you're an Eagles fan, like, is it Reddick, the pass rusher? Like, you could look at someone like that who might get 2-3 sacks. And, you know, if it's, especially if it becomes more defense minded. So I kind of like the idea of going for like a non quarterback for the MVP, just to get some bigger odds. I think for a missed PAT, it's 4-1.
You got to jump on that. That's a tempting one considering how bad kickers have been this season.
Yeah.
A couple of the other weird ones that I saw, I'm definitely not good jumping on any of these. Any player to have over 216 receiving yards, 16-1. Any player to have 205 or more rushing yards, 29-1. And any player to have 506 passing yards or more, $41. So these are all in references to you know, those some incredible totals we've seen in the Super Bowl, obviously. The last time the Eagles played in the Super Bowl, I believe that 506 passing yards was either Brady or Foles. So that's what those are in references to. But the kind of other sneaky bet, I think, just while we're on the topic for kicking, is over seven and a half punts is the line for this game. I think we're going to see probably a lot of punts. You know, like you tend to see it in Super Bowls where teams are pretty nervous in the first half,
especially in that really, first quarter. I'll be very expect to see not many first downs in the first, you know, few sort of, you know, when, you know, positions for both teams. So that's not a bad bet.
And it's paying 325. But I think, to me, I'm still going to go like Eagles to win by, you know, more than the line, I think, is my safest one. And then, you know, maybe jump on that punting one. Then maybe have a quick stab at Jalen Hurts to get first touchdown. But Si, what are you thinking, mate?
You're for sure putting on about six more bets than what you're telling us.
Absolutely.
The one I just thought of just now is a Patrick Mahomes anytime rushing touchdown. I can't imagine that's paying tremendous money, but I just think the way he just scrambles often, and feel like that will be in play in the red zone a lot. And
I wonder if that should be paying better odds for you, given the potential injury or the unknown about how good he can scramble. But yeah,
That's the thing. So maybe there's a little bit of doubt there that they don't feel like he can scramble as well. But to me, the last few weeks he's been scrambling pretty well. So he's saying it's paying $4.05. I think he's talking about the Mahomes rushing. So
correct. Anytime touchdown. It's not rushing specific. But.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Okay, sure. I don't hate that at all. There's a little option.
If you really want to get like outrageous, I think you can do nowadays. You can do like who's going to score the first two touchdowns in the match. It's obviously pretty low percentage sort of bet, but like I think I sort of looked. You could go like Dallas Goedert. You could go the tight ends. You could say okay, Eagles are going to come out strong. Dallas Goedert first touchdown. Kelce second touchdown in the match. And it's 75-1.
Wow.
So, or you could do like Miles Sanders first touchdown, Kelce second, and I think it was 60-1. I didn't look at Hurts, but I do feel like the Chiefs are going to come right back. So I think it'll be 7-all, you know? So like, yeah, if you do either a Sanders or a Hurts, who I think are probably the most likely beneficiaries or first scorers for the Eagles, then you could kind of pair it up with a Kelce or maybe a Pacheco, but, and obviously the odds will kind of tweak slightly.
What should be back-to-back pick sixes? Just out of interest, what if you had the odds pulled up? What are the odds of it going to overtime?
Is there a bet on that?
Absolutely. It's a Super Bowl. We got bets on absolutely everything, mate. Like you can bet on.
I'd be surprised if there wasn't.
let's have a look.
While you're looking it up, let me just, because I feel like it would be fascinating because we haven't had an overtime this playoffs, and obviously they've brought in this new rule with both teams getting a crack with the pill. Mm. So to see that unfold for the first time in the Super Bowl would be quite something.
Not the first time in the Super Bowl. Remember our Tom Brady's Patriots. Yeah, 28-3, baby.
But it would be the first time.
With the new rules.
$10 $10 for yes, $1.06 for no.
Another one that
$10 to get overtime.
Another one that I listened or heard about was, you know, because the way that the games have gone, like, and again, if you think the Eagles are going to be leading, doing like a final touchdown is like the defense, like Eagles D final touchdown, I think it's 38-1. And the reason where that could really come in is if you're sort of trying to do like laterals or do some of these crazy things because you're playing catch up or, you know, it's last few plays of the game, you know, that could definitely happen. So I've come out with some pretty outrageous long, you know, put a cheeky few dollars on. And when they come in, you can be happy.
Yeah. Hey, what's the final play? Because, you know, probably a quarterback kneel is the favourite for the final play of the game. But it'll be interesting to see what the...
Well, yeah, if it's actual final play, it'll be the... But yeah.
Final play would be a quarterback kneel, I think. But, you know, there are options depending on who's got the ball for the final play, as you say. Someone laterals and someone gets an intercept. But... yeah. Any other bits? If we move on, so we've got.
I mean, it's one of those things. Think of it like people obviously not necessarily into horse racing, but it's kind of like the Melbourne Cup, where people that don't necessarily ever bet on horse racing on the Melbourne Cup day, they kind of put on a bunch of bets, just kind of dip their toes in. And it's, I feel like that's the same with Super Bowl, where it's just, you know, it's for the casual fan that doesn't really watch much, whether it's the time zone or whatever. They're most likely going to have much more of an interest. And, you know, there's a bunch of, as Thwaite said, there's thousands of props and things you can do. And I'm sure a lot of the companies will do like kind of parlays where they kind of, you know, package them up for you. You can obviously create your own, but, you know, and it's just chuck a $10 on it or on a couple and see how you go.
Yeah. And I mean, like, it gets to the point where what's the coin toss, head or tails? What colored Gatorade is being thrown on the winning coach? The ads at Super Bowl halftime, how many dogs are involved? You know, like, it's crazy.
I think you can get these cheat sheets, I think, that have like a big list of the things, which are quite fun to do.
Yeah, how long's the national anthem? We got it. We love it.
Yes, yeah. And just broadly, like the Super Bowl is, you know, Dave sort of alluding to there, it is one of those sort of few sporting events around the world that kind of captures, you know, the attention well beyond the sport. You know, Melbourne Cup will be the one down under in New Zealand, Australia, but this is sort of a thing that everyone will tune into, regardless of, you know, people won't have watched the football game at all this summer and winter and won't know who half the players are, but will tune into the Super Bowl. So looking forward to it. But one of the other reasons they'll tune in is the Super Bowl halftime show. And this year it's, is it Rihanna? It must be some other people as well.
Riri, yeah, it's Rihanna.
Riri. So is this going to be the best Super Bowl halftime show of all time? And if it's not, what was your favorite Super Bowl halftime show of all time?
Super Bowl halftime shows are always interesting because they're always aimed at these certain demographics. You know, and I appreciate the hell out of Rihanna. So I have no doubt it's going to be a fantastic Super Bowl. I mean, for me, probably I'm only counting the ones that I've watched. So I realize people are going to sit there and be like Prince and Michael Jackson and all that kind of stuff. So I'm only going to count the ones that I've watched.
Have you heard of, just before you do, have you heard of, there's this, it's quite a popular website or app. It's called YouTube.
I hate you, Dave, so much.
Well, I mean, you're just counting, but you can obviously watch them, Mike. Michael Jackson and Prince are probably the two most famous. So, like, surely at some point in your life, you've caught glimpses of it. Like, I think they're easily top three, both of them, because they're the most iconic.
Yeah. But look, I'm going for it for ones that I've watched live, because, like, going back and watching something, you have different reactions to it when you're not watching it live. So that's the only reason why I'm doing it this way. And I know you and Sai may obviously do it differently, but, you know, I'm just kind of backing it up with things. I think for me, the J-Lo and Shakira one was the most hilarious for me, just because, you know, it was we're at a pub and we're having such an amazing time. It was absolutely hilarious. Our first touchdown score bet had come in. We were all going absolutely wild. So that for me
was one of my best Super Bowl experiences.
Yeah, which has come into why I write that halftime show for sure.
I feel like that's not the halftime show. That's more the experience. That could have literally been like a silent, like you can even hear it, like it was just a mimer performing.
Yeah. Well, speaking of ones where the experience wasn't great, but
Dwayne could have quit his job after that day. He made money on that game.
The one that where the experience wasn't great, but I did enjoy the halftime show, was obviously last year's one. Dr. Dre, Snoop Dogg, Eminem, Mary J. Blige, Kendrick Lamar, and 50 Cent. That absolutely. I mean, that's our era of listening to music. You know, they were all excellent. I just, for me, that's number one, just because, you know, it's a recent memory. So recency bias is probably coming into play. But, you know, when I think about like ones like The Weeknd and stuff like that, or Katy Perry. Katy Perry's only good for me because of the whole left shark, right shark thing.
Last year's was really good because it kind of felt like they were just getting kind of back to it being a Super Bowl show, and it sort of kind of gone away from, like, The Weeknd one. Just I don't even know what I was even watching seeing that one unfold. But I feel like the Dr. Dre one was, you know, like you still felt like you're in the stadium. It was still like it was a show. It was some legends. I thought it was great.
I think in the defense of the weekend, that was the COVID year. So I don't think there was a single, like, it was pretty much empty crowd. So it's like that energy that you might be able to create in any other year.
True.
So I feel like, a little bit in his defense there. But yeah, I mean, it's hard to argue with that last year. I mean, there might be a little bit of recency bias, but as I sort of said at the top, I haven't gone and watched every Super Bowl halftime. I know that from watching, I think it's Peyton's Places, it was probably like the either late 80s or early 90s where they actually kind of introduced it. I think what happened is one year there was like a TV show. I think it was one of the Wayans brothers was doing like kind of like a sketch sort of show at halftime, and everyone went over to that. And so then obviously whoever had the TV rights to the Super Bowl were like, well, hang on. We're losing everyone for this halftime period. And then they kind of, because I think it used to just be like kind of, what do they hit, like high school, like marching bands and stuff. So it's kind of like cringy in the early days. But the ones that I have, yeah, definitely Michael Jackson, Prince, from like, you know, clips from the past. And then the other one that I can vaguely remember, and this would have been before I was even really watching football, is because I had to look at what year it was when Beyonce did it in 2013. I just remember that because I think she did the Destiny's Child, her band. Like they came back, so I just kind of vaguely remember that one, more so than some of the other, you know. But it's kind of a weird thing because, like I said, I couldn't remember the games in the sort of mid-2010s, but I do remember this, oh, yeah, oh, YouTube performed or Rolling Stones. Or so it's kind of a, for a lot of people, that's what you do remember more than the match if you're not a big football fan or weren't in the past.
I also, what's going to cause some issues, Dave, we try and make this podcast not controversial. It was called Destiny's Child, Beyonce's band.
Yeah. So but I said that, didn't I? I said it. I think I
was... You said Beyonce's band. So, you know, I'm sure Kelly Rowland and Michelle Williams will be absolutely pissed off that you said that. And obviously, like, a couple of the other unknown
well, I don't,
members.
In my defense in that, I don't think they're even 2% of the wealth they've got if Beyonce wasn't in that band. Beyonce to that band is like Freddie Mercury to Queen.
Well, if Michelle Williams and Kelly Rowland are listening to our podcast this week, we apologize, or at least I do. I'm sorry, Kellyanne. I'm sorry, Michelle.
I think only Kelly Rowland are listening. Sorry. I think just Kelly. I agree. I mean, I think a lot of recency bias plays into this this sort of debate for sure, but this would be a good one to hear what people think of. And so anyone that wants to tell us what they think or why we're wrong on social media should get in touch. But, Jen, should we wrap it up? Because we've got another episode in 3 days' time, which is pretty fun.
Yeah, I think we're done. Like, let's strap in for the rest of this NBA trade deadline that obviously comes to a conclusion, 3 p.m. Eastern time, New York, on Thursday. But, yeah, it's going to be a wild week, that's for sure.
Yeah, awesome. All right, well, we will record pretty much as soon as the trade deadline's over, so that will be a very fresh fresh analysis and hot takes, depending on what happens in the next 3 days. Looking forward to that, and looking forward to Super Bowl on Sunday. Thanks so much for listening.
Bye.